With spring Black Friday deals at the Home Depot, you can give your lawn or garden beds a pop of color and protection. Right now, get a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10. Help your soil retain moisture longer with color that lasts up to 12 months. Shop spring Black Friday deals for a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Color selection varies by store. Limit 60 bags per customer while supplies last.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hello there, boys and girls, and welcome to a brand new live episode of Circling the Bases, proudly a part of NBC Sports Edge. I am your host, Colin Henderson. Joining me today are Edge's own DJ Short, Drew Silva, and Christopher Crawford. 30 teams entered the season with hope, 2,400 different players, over 181,000 plate appearances, nearly 6,000 home runs, over 42,000 strikeouts, and 10 playoff teams later, and we are down to the final two. The city of Atlanta versus the city of Houston, Hotlanta versus H-Town, Braves Nation versus the Us Against the World Astros. Only one will be left standing. So I think let's just get right into that. DJ, Drew, Chris, and I will be breaking down the Fall Classic for the next hour, getting you ready for the World Series, what we're most looking forward to, and our predictions on who will be crowned champion. So, boys, let's start this off. DJ, Chris, Drew. Chris, let's start with you, as you basically wanted to hand-wave this postseason completely to give the Dodgers the title. Chris, explain your Dodgers and back your Braves.
Look, I just like In-N-Out Burger an awful lot. It's the only explanation that I can have, right? I'm surprised. Like, look, I think this is not a case of the best team in the National League making the World Series. I think you can argue that maybe the Astros were the best team in the American League, although, you know, the Rays were awfully, awfully good, and a lot of us picked the Rays to go to the World Series. And, you know, it's just the thing about this is what makes the postseason fun is you get these type of upsets. And, you know, it was a big thing for Atlanta, I think, to have home field, winning all three of their home games. A big difference from last year when they were playing, you know, three games at an alternate site, basically, where there was no home field advantage. I think they really took advantage of that. But this is fun. Like, this is it's been 22 years since we've seen Atlanta in the World Series. It seems like as a kid, I was seeing them go every year, but it's been a whole kid N plus one since they've been here. I'm looking forward to it.
DJ, the Astros are back in, third time in 5 years. We all know they won, and I put that with an asterisk next to it, in 2017 against the Dodgers. They lost to the Washington Nationals in 2019. Here we are in 2021 with the Astros back in the Fall Classic. DJ, how do we feel about the Astros coming into this to this postseason?
I mean, I guess they're cast as the villains. They're the heavy favorites. The Braves are the underdogs. So I think there's going to be a lot of people, you know, on the Braves side to see if they can pull this out. But, you know, to be fair, the mix with the Astros has changed. There's some of the familiar faces there, which I think if you're a casual fan, you know Jose Altuve, you know Alex Bregman, you know Carlos Correa. But there's a whole new cast of guys on this team who you may end up really, really liking. Let's say you are a casual fan and you're tuning in for the first time. So I think that's going to be kind of the narrative, but I wouldn't get too lost in that because the personnel's changed. And also Dusty Baker's there, who is just the man. And I'm rooting for him to get his first World Series, even though it can be challenging at times. But how can you not root for Dusty Baker?
Right. Dusty Baker versus Brian Snitker. Drew, let's talk about those managers for a second. Both old veteran guys, both guys with a ton of history behind them. Snitker, who has been basically a lifelong Brave for the last 40 years, leading his way all the way up to this World Series. Meanwhile, Dusty Baker, the hard luck Dusty Baker, who has had maybe his entire career kind of be punctuated by postseason failure, so to speak, by not being able to get over the hill. Talk about these two as we enter the World Series.
Yeah, you're right about Snicker being kind of a baseball lifer, kind of in the mold of Mike Schilt, really. Not to make this about the Cardinals at all, but I'm reminded when I see the two of them, not just by the way they look. But yeah, I mean, I'm a big Dusty Baker fan. I think he's like just the coolest dude on the planet. Snicker's more of kind of a lay low. I don't want to call him a nerd because I'm sure he could take me in a fight. But kind of more in that mold. And Dusty has led a really super interesting life. I'm sure Brian Snicker has too. But I was gonna say, Chris, I think there is In-N-Out Burger in Houston.
Is
so
there?
Yeah, there is. I'm like
the In-N-Out series, we will call it.
Yeah, there we go. Whataburger is pretty good too. Like it's not the same quality as In-N-Out, but it's fine.
Like, In-N-Out Burger is overrated, obviously.
We're East Coasters over
really
here.
Not.
Give me five guys over In-N-Out, and I'll call it a night. I've been out to the West Coast like three times. I've gotten In-N-Out Burger like each of those times and walked away like I didn't just see the face of God while eating. It's good.
Okay. We could go on a whole 30 minutes. Yeah.
We absolutely can.
And we will.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, to get it back to baseball, yeah, we're basically 24 hours away from first pitch as we hop on here. And thanks for people for joining us live. I think it's an interesting matchup. Like it's a unique matchup, the first World Series meeting between the Braves and Astros, because the Astros were in the National League from their founding in, was it 1962, to their final year in the NL in 2012. It looks like, I just looked this up, the Astros are minus 140 right now to win the series on betting markets. Braves at plus 120. I honestly thought the Astros would be a heavier favorite before I just looked it up, but we'll get into all the angles on all sides on this show with you know what those two teams have going for them and what's gotten them here. But yeah, baseball's now gone 21 years without a repeat World Series champion since the 1998 to 2000 Yankees. The only major sport that can claim that level of parity, whether that's good or bad. I think maybe dynasties and star players help you grow the sport a little bit better, but it's cool. It seems like if you're a baseball fan, usually your team has a chance unless they're the Seattle Mariners.
Oh, boy.
Oh. And shots across the bow to begin. By the way, Drew, Astros opened at minus 150. Line has moved to minus 140. Braves opened at plus 130, now plus 120. So money is currently coming in on the Braves side, yet the Astros remain the favorite.
You think it's because people want the Braves to win? Like the public?
I think there's absolutely a part of that to a certain extent. I think people got a couple bucks to throw down. I think, you know, in what we think could be a very even series, you know, you might throw it down on the team that you want to win rather than the team you want to see lose, give or take on that front. But like Drew said, a welcome and thank you to everyone who is watching this live. If you are watching this live on our YouTube or Twitch channels, please feel free to comment, write in anything that you'd like. We'd love to involve you in the conversation. And we are going to be covering all angles of the World Series over the next 45 minutes or so. So please let us know if there's anything that you want to talk about. And before we get into all those X's and O's, let's just kind of briefly rewind as to how we got here. After winning the American League Central with a 95-67 record, the Astros beat the White Sox in the Division Series 3-1 before knocking off the Red Sox in six games. Meanwhile, the Braves, champions of the National League East with an 88-73 record, took care of business against the Brewers in four before, as we said, upsetting the defending champion Dodgers in six. It's been a tale of two different seasons for these two teams. The Astros came in obviously with the chip on their shoulder, the way that it was an us versus the world mentality. And they've played really well from the beginning of the season. And it's been a relatively smooth sail throughout the year. Not a whole lot of ups and downs. They've been one of the classes of the American League for the duration. Meanwhile, the Braves on the other side have had a very interesting season. First off, you have Marcell Ozuna getting suspended for domestic violence, who they had just handed a four-year, $65 million contract to at the start of the year. He has not played since earlier this year. Mike Soroka re-injuring his Achilles tendons. They had big plans for him, a 2.68 ERA in 2019. He is not with the team. And then, of course, Ronald Acuña Jr. injuring his ACL and missing the remainder of the year. All of that spelling doom for the Braves, who, by the way, were under 500 at the All-Star break. Instead, did not get a winning record till August 6th, and since then went 33-18 and overhauled their team at the trade deadline, adding in outfielders Jock Peterson, Adam Duvall, Eddie Rosario, Jorge Soler, to really settleize that team. So a big facelift at the deadline for the Braves. So let's start with, I think we're going to break the show right now into a little bit of a kind of offensive conversation and then a pitching conversation. So let's start with the offense. And let's start with the Astros offense. What has been maybe the class of Major League Baseball all year, leads the league in runs, lead the league in weighted on base average, sixth in home runs in the majors. So let's talk about the Astros offense first.
Yeah, I mean, if we're breaking this series down into four groups, like you said, Braves and Astros pitching staffs, Braves and Astros offenses, I think this Astros offense would stand out as the most potent, like the most potentially high impact of those four groups.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it starts with Jose Altuve at leadoff, an incredible postseason performer. The most postseason home runs by any infielder in MLB history with 21. Obviously, those kinds of leaderboards favor modern players because of the way the playoffs have expanded, but
sure,
you get the drift. Altuve's career OPS in the playoffs is 923. That's a sample size of 325 plate appearances, too. So this is not fluky. We know the kind of player he is. He's had some ups and downs recently, but in October, he certainly shines. Michael Brantley batting second. You know, he's approaching age 35 and coming off a relatively disappointing regular season and hasn't gotten on base in these playoffs at the level we're accustomed to. But manager Dusty Baker figures to keep him in that number two hole where he's been all year when he's been healthy. Alex Bregman at number three, he ranks second all time in postseason home runs by a third baseman with 13, one home run away from tying Justin Turner at the very top of that list. Yordan Alvarez at cleanup, what more can you say about this guy? In the ALCS against the Red Sox, he became the first player ever to out-hit the opposition in the final two games of a playoff series. I'm sure Red Sox fans love to hear that. They simply could not get him out, and you know neither could the White Sox. Alvarez, through 43 plate appearances this postseason, is batting 441 with a 1329 OPS. He hit 522 against Boston, which is the sixth highest batting average in a single series in postseason history, behind only David Ortiz, who hit 688 in the 2013 World Series, which I remember not so fondly. Edgar Martinez in the 1995 at ALDS. Shout out to Crawford's grandma.
Thank you, sir.
Eddie Rosario in the 2021 NLCS had a higher batting average in a single series. We'll get into him. And then it's David Fries, Javi Lopez. He's just – Alvarez has been a dominant slugger since the moment he arrived in the majors in 2019. Carlos Correa hitting fifth, you know, playing for a contract this winter. I think that's a narrative. Even in games that he's gone quiet this month, there's usually been some kind of big moment that involves him offensively or defensively. Like even in the final two games of the ALCS, Correa was 0-for-7, but still scored two runs. Had a big showing against Chicago the previous round, due for some important at-bats against the Braves pitching staff. Kyle Tucker's been hitting sixth for the most part, which speaks to how deep this lineup is. He actually hit seventh a few times in the ALDS. I'd probably swap Tucker with Brantley in the number two spot, but whatever. I don't think it's going to happen. Tucker had a breakout regular season, has a 935 OPS with four home runs and 15 RBIs in 10 playoff games so far. Yuri Gurriel in the seventh spot. He led all qualified American League hitters in batting average during the regular season at 319 and then batted 455 in the ALCS against Boston. Kind of an underrated guy. He went from being a little bit overrated to a little bit underrated, especially in fantasy, I would say. Sure. The eighth spot usually belongs to whoever's playing center field. Chaz McCormick recently with Jake Myers, still recovering from that shoulder injury that he suffered in ALDS game four when he hit against the wall. We might see some Jose Siri there at some point in the series. Martin Maldonado rounds it out, not known for his bat, but he's had some success in the past against the Braves game one starter, Charlie Morton. So maybe a big hit in there for Maldonado. This offense, you mentioned it, Colin, ranked first among all 30 clubs in a range of offensive stats. batting average, first on base percentage during the regular season, second only to the Blue Jays in combined team OPS at 784. And it's all borne out here in the postseason. They're setting records for runs scored with two outs, especially the clutch hitting, the non-clutch hitting. It's a menacing lineup for any opponent. And the Braves are going to need to continue to surprise, I think, to pull this off, at least on paper. You know, this is baseball, and there's going to be some unexpected games, some unexpected innings, some unexpected at-bats.
All right, DJ, why don't you catch us up on the Braves offense while we're at it?
Yeah, I mean, certainly the Astros have the best offense on paper. I have no issue acknowledging that, but I think the Braves are pretty dangerous as well, and I think their lineup is pretty deep, especially if you add in the prospect of the DH for the games under American League rules. The Braves have the stars. We know that. Freddie Freeman, Ozzie Albies, Austin Riley emerged as a star this season, but suddenly Eddie Rosario is the best hitter in the world, or at least Yordan Alvarez is in the conversation. But Eddie Rosario just went off during the NLCS, 14 for 25 with three home runs, one double, one triple, nine RBIs over those six games. Had two go-ahead home runs in the series. One walk-off hit was a double shy of the cycle in game four. He's just been incredible. They still have offense they could get from Dansby Swanson. Jock Peterson has had big hits this postseason. Adam Duvall has plenty of power as their regular center fielder. I think what's going to be interesting for this Braves lineup is basically how it's going to line up, because game one, left-hander Framber Valdez, the Braves just get Jorge Soler back from the COVID IL. Do they put Jorge Soler in the leadoff spot for game one against the lefty?
Great question.
That remains to be seen. He hasn't really played much recently. Eddie Rosario has been red hot, but he's a lefty hitter. Do you want to move Rosario down, or do you want to keep him where he's had success? Now, when in the series against the Dodgers, when they faced Julio Urias, they had Dansby Swanson lead off, and Eddie Rosario hit fifth. So I think we'll probably see Jorge Soler in the leadoff spot, move Rosario down to the fifth spot, and just bump everyone down a little bit. But I guess we'll see how that goes. And the big question is how effective Soler is going to be. He did have that big double in game six against the Dodgers, so I think that's a good sign about where he was. He only missed the minimum time. I don't think he had any symptoms after testing positive for COVID. And I'm sure he's been, you know, hitting in the cage and doing batting practice and stuff like that. But I think it's going to be really fascinating to see, you know, where this Braves lineup basically lines up. I think as you get to game two and moving forward, we'll likely see Rosario back at the top. But I think just having Soler back in the lineup, having the DH for those first couple of games, I think it really lengthens the Braves lineup. And they're plenty threatening as well. I don't think this is going to be a cakewalk for the Astros pitching staff.
Yeah, you guys brought up the DH. And Drew, I wanted to ask, like, what do you do when we get to games 3, 4, and 5 with that Astros lineup? Because you brought up Brantley, you brought up Yordan Alvarez. What decision are you, because you have to have Yordan Alvarez's bat in the lineup. Like, you have to have that guy swinging the bat. So what decision would you make personally, like, to make sure that he's in the lineup?
I mean, can Kyle Tucker play center field?
I think that's probably what I would do.
Yeah, that's probably what I would do too, because I want Michael Brantley's bat in the lineup as well. And, like, that is not a great defensive outfield with those three.
It's bad. It's bad. Yeah. And Tucker's not a great defender. He's made a handful of starts in center field in the regular season since he debuted. But I think in that situation, I don't know what Dusty Baker will do. He seems like maybe one of the few managers who actually makes his own lineup and like makes his own on-field decision.
Sure.
But I think it's obvious that you just put Tucker in center and Alvarez in right and Brantley in left, and you know, you don't have to worry about it so much, but we'll see. I mean, he seems to really love Brantley so much that he's not going to drop him from the lineup. I don't really know why you would. And he seems to like Chaz McCormick, assuming Jake Byers isn't going to be ready, is he?
It's still up in the air. Baker was kind of vague about it today. I think they're still monitoring it and giving him treatment. We'll see. Yeah.
Both managers have until tomorrow morning, Tuesday morning, to announce their final rosters. So still technically questionable on the call, maybe leaning towards doubtful, at least from insider sources here. But let's talk about a little bit more. You mentioned the DH, which I think is going to be a major talking point for the Braves, as like you said, DJ, it's going to lengthen that lineup quite a bit, knowing that they have the ability. So maybe the DH, a real positive for the Braves, whereas the lack of DH hurting the Astros more because, again, one of those bats needs to either not be in the lineup if you want to have a better defensive outfield and then and become a pinch hitter, which that's going to be a tough to sit any of them down, or B, yeah, you're going to play with a defensive outfield that you really hope balls are hit directly at them without a whole lot of movement, because yeah, I'm not sure anyone's gunning anybody down in the gaps.
Yeah, I would say for the Braves too, like, it's not ideal that Adam Duvall is playing center field. He's a plenty good corner outfielder, but like, sure, that's kind of by necessity as well. So they're kind of similar as far as that's concerned.
Do we have more confidence that Yordan Alvarez or Eddie Rosario continues their hot bat from the championship series?
Alvarez.
Yeah, like, I'll give some of the chance to back Eddie Rosario here.
I've been high on Eddie Rosario for a very long time, and I admit that he's a flawed player. He's not a great defender. Frustrates the heck out of me that he always draws like 25 to 30 walks a year, because he's a pitcher that hitter that pitcher should have to work around, because he has that power and that ability. But Pablo Sandoval for Eddie Rosario, like, that trade is going to be one that I think about for a very, very long time. And good for the Braves. They didn't have to make moves. They could have been a team that stayed stagnant and nobody would have blamed them after Acuna if they just kind of not packed things up, but didn't make a big effort. But they proved that you can go get players without destroying your farm system.
And I think that means a lot for a team to see, 100%. You know, your front office make some moves and say, like, hey, we still believe in you guys. So
absolutely.
I think that's part of it too, for sure.
And Rosario's always been the kind of player, like, over the course of a 162 game season, you really see the flaws that he doesn't get on base a ton and is not a reliable defender. But he's always been a good hitter, and especially, you know, in these little postseason spurts, he's definitely a guy that can catch fire. But yeah, as the sample size grows larger, I would trust that Yordan Alvarez has more talent offensively than Eddie Rosario.
Sure,
no debate.
Let's talk about that Braves trade deadline for a hot second, because the Astros didn't have to do a whole lot at the deadline. They improved their bullpen a little bit, adding Kendall Graveman from your Mariners, Chris. And meanwhile, the Braves, with all those injuries that I mentioned or suspensions that I had mentioned before, going out there and really basically on the fly retooling that entire outfield and turning it into a brand new prospect, basically within about a 48-hour period. Right. I mean, Chris, it's like you said, it's awesome that they did it in the first place. But for it to have worked out as well as it have, them to be sitting here with the NL title in their laps already, I mean, just absolutely impressive for what this Braves front office has been able to do.
Absolutely. And they got those guys without giving up, like, major prospects. I mean, they got Jock Peterson, a.k.a. Wilma Flintstone, for a prospect that didn't have any chance of making a debut. I'm sorry, I see Wilma Flintstone every time I see those pearls. He's an awesome player, but I do. They got.
I see Woody Woodpecker every time I see Yuri Gurriel. So that's
fair. That's fair. That's totally fair. Yeah, Hanna-Barbera is doing well in this, but that's not a universal product anymore. They got Jorge Soler, they got Adam Duvall, like, four guys that were basically organizational depth for this team. Like, that, and it's frustrating as a fan of a team that didn't make those type of moves, but it's impressive that they did. Because, and I think DJ hit the nail on the head about how much that can motivate a locker room, that a front office is backing you to say, look, we have had so many things go wrong. Our most talented pitcher, I would say, in Mike Soroka, and one of the best players on the planet are not going to help us, but we are going to give you the resources to make this a possible championship contending team. I'd be thrilled as heck for something like that.
Yeah, right around when they retooled their outfield at the trade deadline is when the infielders all got hot at the same time.
Yes.
And it's why they managed to win the NL East, even though they sat right around or even below the 500 mark for much of the regular season. So, yeah, I believe in the kind of non-human element there, that, you know, the front office went and made some creative trades and, like you said, didn't give up much. And I think the whole team was like, all right, we've actually got the tools to do this.
There was a series in late July. It was a Mets Braves series. It was a 5-game series because I believe there's a makeup game in there. And the Braves won 3 out of 5. And, you know, if the Mets had won 4 out of 5 in that series, let's say, I don't know if the Braves would have made these moves. You know what I mean? Right. So yeah. I think winning those 3 out of 5 games was also confidence instilling to be like, this, you know, this Mets team's beatable. We can win this division. Absolutely. And I think it all changed. There.
So credit to the Mets. Is what you're
saying. Good job, Mets. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I'm glad that we
Mets
found
are, our Mets way are good to, for something.
We found our way back to Queens in this conversation somehow. Let's go around the table real quick. So I wanted to ask, as I walked into both offenses here, these might be the two best infields in the major leagues right now, if you were to write it down. If you had to make your choice for the remainder of this series and you have to pick one infield over the other, which one would you go with? Drew, start us off.
I mean, there's an argument. So for this, for what is the stipulation? Like, just right now for this series, picking.
Sure, we can use that as the stipulation. I'm good with that.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with the Astros. I mean, that collection of Altuve, Bregman, Correa, and, you know, Gurriel too, I think is – it's probably in the argument with being one of the most talented infields of all time. And the Braves is really good too.
Yeah.
But I'd take a little bit more of the proven guys. And I would take Correa over Swanson and I would take Bregman over Riley, even though I love what Austin Riley has done. That's probably closer than I made it. But
Yeah,
I would take the Astros too, but it's very close.
The more I think it through, it's actually pretty darn close. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll take Atlanta. Like, and I think you guys are, I can't argue with you too long about it, but like, I just think it's the most complete group. Like, Freddie Freeman is a dang superstar at first base. Ozzie Albies is playing as well as he possibly can play right now. Like, the weakness is Bregman. The weakness is Swanson. Like, it's weird to say for the first overall pick that he's the weakness in the group, but like, he just doesn't have the same type of offensive upside that those other guys have. But he's a terrific defensive player, and all of those guys can pick it. I think the overall game for what Atlanta's infield is doing right now is just a little bit better.
I think I'm with you on that, Chris. Austin Riley has changed my mind quite a bit. I liked him a lot as a prospect. He kind of lost his shine when he came up here to the majors and struggled initially. And
way
this year
different
he's
player now.
Completely changed his entire approach at the plate and his production at the plate as well. Dansby, you're right, is the weak link of this group.
He's a pretty good
weak
link.
It's funny when you're comparing.
Yeah, that's great.
But that's a really good weak link to have. Also, he's the prettiest out of everyone that we're referring to.
Ooh,
so,
let's get into that.
That's a hot take.
That is a hot take. Literally.
Dansby all day. But so give me Atlanta there. But like I said, it's razor thin. I think these might be the two best infields. Let's pop over to pitching. But before we do, look, we may have just passed by Mageddon this week in your fantasy football leagues, and I hope you all survived. But injuries and bye week hell isn't going away anytime soon. So make sure you are signed up for NBC Sports Edge Plus, filled with weekly guides and rankings to help you dominate your league more than the Titans dominated the Chiefs on Sunday. Signing up for Edge Plus gets you access to our fantasy football, basketball, and hockey sections, in addition to our incredible baseball and sports betting content. As a reward for our listeners, be sure to use promo code BASES10 to get 10% off any premium subscription package, either monthly or annually, regardless of tier. So to find your edge, make sure you're signed up for NBC Sports Edge Plus. The promo code again is BASES10. Also, NBC Sports is celebrating 100 days to the Winter Olympics on Thursday, October 28th. Top Americans Michaela Schifrin and Shaun White highlight nearly 3,000 athletes who are expected to compete from about 95 nations. So get ready for the Winter Olympics, which begins February 3rd on NBC.
Doers, mowing season is here. With Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now you can get gas-like power with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower for just $329. With a runtime of nearly an hour, it's the perfect mower to tackle your half-acre lawn without a trip to the gas station. Just push and mow. Your grass won't wait, so buy it online and pick it up in-store to get out there sooner. Get gas-like power this spring with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower just $329 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
I love the Winter Olympics.
Yeah.
It's so, so crazy that they're starting back up again.
Yeah, running back. This is our, what's NBC's once in a lifetime? Two Olympics and a Super Bowl in a 6-month period.
Well, spring training will probably be delayed, so all eyes in the sporting world will be.
Can we save that to like?
Yeah. Let's focus on the positives of the World Series before we start posting questions yet.
You notice there's been like an embargo on the media talking about that right now.
Yeah. It has been a real mum from everybody. Like, let's just focus on the good thing before we get to the really, really bad stuff that comes right around the corner. Chris, let's start us off. Let's do a little deep dive into the pitching now. And Chris, start us off. You're going to take over the Astros. So give us a little breakdown on the Astros pitching staff.
So, yeah, this is an interesting group, I guess you would say. I think one of the big things here is that Lance McCullers not being a part of the roster is big. I think he's their most talented starting pitcher. He's the guy that I trust the most of these guys to miss bats outside of their relievers. So I think that's a big loss. Framber Valdez is he was so good in his last start against the Red Sox. Seeing a starter go that deep, I had to look and see if I went back to 2006 or something like that. But it was very impressive, and he had that lineup off balance. I don't know if this is a great matchup against the Braves, to be completely honest. Like, there's so much good right-handed power in that lineup. I do kind of wonder how well that's going to match up. Luis Garcia, the difference in his start – between game 6 and I believe game 2, night and flipping day. Like, he was so good throwing
Rocks
so much.
Baby.
Throwing that so much harder. Unique. Yeah. It was very unique. And a lot of people had some hot takes on Twitter about that velocity difference. So, which is weird. Usually people on Twitter are very, very not emotional. he's certainly capable of being a solid starter. I don't think you can rely on him to be a guy who throws has a no-hit bid against this Atlanta lineup. But, that Boston lineup wasn't exactly a terrible one either. He's probably going to make a couple of starts. The key pitcher to me here for Houston is going to be Christian Javier, because I think they're going to need him to throw a couple of 2-3-inning gems for Houston in this series. And I think when you hear me talk, you might be surprised to see who I'm picking to win this World Series. But I think he's really important, and he's been very good so far in this postseason for the most part. He has an ERA of 0.00, so that'll work, and 13 strikeouts in 7 2/3 innings. I think he's going to be really important. The bullpen is solid. Kendall Graveman, again, we talked about that trade, is a solid stopgap. Phil Maton and Ryan Stanek are going to be huge in this series as well. And Ryan Stanek has been throwing. He looks like he's getting ready for a heavy metal concert after the game. But he has significantly quality stuff. And there was a reason why he was kind of the closer of the future for a couple of different organizations. But Ryan Pressly, I think, gives them a huge advantage at closer. And we'll let Colin talk about the Atlanta bullpen in a second. But Ryan Pressly's really good, and he's been outstanding, striking out 12 batters per 9 innings, has given up the one run in the 6 innings, but you'll certainly take that. Curious what we'll see from Zach Greinke and Jose Urquidy. I imagine one of those guys is going to have to make a start. I can't rely on Zach Greinke right now. Like, the stuff he's showing right now just isn't good. I might rely more on Zach Greinke as a pinch hitter than what is a pitcher right now. Like, he can swing the bat. So that'll be interesting to see if he does get a start in one of the NL games, if he gets to swing. But this is not a great pitching staff. This is an outstanding lineup. If you were going on the 20/80 scale, I think you could go plus-plus. More like a 45-50 grade pitching staff, in my personal opinion. But I do think Christian Javier is going to play a big, big role in this series because I think they're going to have to use him a couple of times for multiple innings.
Yeah, McCullers is huge. I mean,
yeah,
it's huge.
It and is.
I think they did fine without him against the Red Sox, but it's really going to bear out.
Different now, yeah.
Yeah,
it's hard for Lightning to strike twice. I mean,
exactly. It's true.
Yeah, Garcia was hit around pretty good in his previous starts during the playoffs, and same for Valdez for that matter. Mm-hmm. So, like, if both of them aren't on, if they can't repeat or come close to what they did last time, they're in trouble. If one of them can't do what they did last time, it's still problematic, but at least they're still in it. But there's a lot riding on Valdez and Garcia.
Absolutely.
And look at, I think the Astros starting pitching staff got a total of 6 innings pitched in the first 3 or 4 games of the ALCS. That's a total. Yeah. That's not per game. That's total. No. So for, as you mentioned, for they need to all start hitting, or at least enough, so that way they don't overtax a bullpen. You can do it once against one team. Don't try and do it twice. You're just asking for something to come back and bite you. Let's talk about the Braves pitching staff briefly, and let's start with their starting pitchers. They have a three-headed monster, I guess you want to say, but a three-headed package of Charlie Morton, Ian Anderson, and Max Fried that – when we look at, say, you know, the Astros offense is a, you know, advantage Astros on the offensive side of the ball, I think this is advantage Braves on the pitching side. Again, Morton, Fried, and Anderson have all been very good all year. Morton was 14-6 with 3.34 across 185 innings pitched, striking out 216 in the regular season. Max Fried was 14-7 with a 3.04 ERA, and he was almost unhittable towards the end of the year. And Ian Anderson has just continued to look excellent in the postseason for the most part and followed up his rookie of the year numbers with a 9-5 with a 3.58 ERA, striking out 124 and 128 innings in the regular season. Postseason-wise, they've all been very good. A combined 3.35 ERA across 9 starts and 43 innings for those 3 Braves starters, amassing a 48-14 K walk ratio. And they've gotten 3 quality starts in those 9. And while that doesn't sound great in today's game where every pitcher barely makes it through the 4th inning, the fact that they were able to have already gotten 3 quality starts in there just shows that this is a strength of this team. Speaking of that, bullpens have so far accounted for 54% of all postseason innings so far. And the Astros, 57% of their innings pitched have been from the bullpen. The Braves, 49% from the Braves. So both these teams rely upon that bullpen. Both managers have used a pretty quick hook if needed to get to those bullpens. And let's talk about the Braves bullpen for a second, because I find it very interesting, a la kind of the Yankees when they had Aroldis Chapman and why am I blanking on the lefty?
Robertson?
The lefty from the Orioles, Britton.
Andrew Miller.
And others, Andrew Miller. They're just, this is a bullpen that is lefty heavy from
Ricky
the top
Metallica.
All of their names.
Chad Green.
Keep throwing them out. So A.J. Minter, Tyler Matzek, and Will Smith are the 3 main lefties out of the pen, and they have been phenomenal so far in this postseason. Those 3 have allowed just 2 runs in 24 and two-thirds innings, striking out 35. Matzek in particular has been maybe one of their MVPs so far this postseason. He's appeared in 9 of the Braves' 10 games this year, picking up 2 wins and throwing a 1.74 ERA across 10 and a third innings pitched. He's gotten more than an inning in multiple appearances, so he has given some really nice length. These 3 are all going to have to be great in this final to counteract the Kyle Tucker, Yordan Alvarez, Michael Brantley left-handed bats that can be so dangerous for the Astros. Coming in from the bullpen, those 3 are going to need to be big. Meanwhile, from the right-handed side there, Luke Jackson and Jesse Chavez have been the top righties out of the pen, and they have left some to be desired. They've combined for only 9 1/3 innings pitched. Tyler Matzek himself has done 10 1/3. So just to show you how much they're relying upon a short band of bullpen arms there. And Jackson in particular, who was pretty good for the regular season, has struggled so far in the postseason, giving up 10 hits and 5 earned in 5 innings pitched. So who is that arm that can get out a righty from that bullpen? That is going to be, I think, maybe one of the biggest X factors that the Braves are going to have to deal with when they have, you know, when Bregman and Correa and Altuve and Gurriel and all of those guys are suddenly popping up, who can get righties out? That is going to be where this Braves pitching staff decides games. But if Morton, Fried, and Anderson can continue to get length, and you can shorten up that bullpen. Like, you know, we talk about in NBA finals all the time, like, can you shorten that bench to only a couple people, you know, only have a 7-8-man rotation? Can the Braves starting pitching staff get deep enough into games that they can put Minter, Matzik, and Smith as their bullpen arms and not have to touch other people? That is going to be very big for the Braves if they want to end up silencing as much as you can this Astros offense.
Yeah, that's literally what I was writing down. I wrote it and circled it. That the right side is just not really something I trust.
What happened to Richard Rodriguez?
That's a good question. I mean, he doesn't miss bats though anyway. Yeah, so in the playoffs, you don't really want that either. And what's interesting about Rodriguez, like the Braves actually gave up some pieces to get him. He's the only one that they really gave up.
Yeah, the good thing with Matzik is he's basically matchup proof at this point. Like that slider is going to make you swing and miss if you're left-handed, right-handed, amphibious, as that famous newspaper quote once said. Like it doesn't matter. He's going to strike you out, and he's 17 strikeouts and 10 in the third innings. I mean, what he did in Game 6 against the Dodgers, like coming into that situation and just dominating Mookie Betts at the very end of that at bat. Like Mookie Betts had absolutely no clue what was coming. And that's the thing. It's like with those two pitches, when he's commanding them, Tyler Matzik is as talented, I'll just go ahead and say it, as any relief pitcher in baseball right now.
You know, and just like 3 years ago, like Matzik, it was unclear if there would even be a future for him in baseball.
Absolutely.
He could not throw strikes, but he joined the Braves, and he's just been awesome. He's been nails. Yeah. There they are.
Yeah.
No doubt.
I'm glad you brought up Jackson, too, because, like, it's not just, like, he's getting hit hard, and he can't throw strikes right now. He's walked four guys in those 5 innings. As good as he was in the regular season, I don't know if you could trust that guy. Like, I don't think I can trust Chris Martin in those situations. As good as Jacob Webb's changes, I don't think I can trust him in a high-leverage situation. So it's really going to be like you hope you get those 6 innings from those 3 starters, and they're very good starters. But asking them to give you 6, maybe even 7 innings if you're feeling real, real lucky, that's a lot to ask against this Houston lineup.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. And who starts a game 4 for the Braves? Like, is it Drew Smyly? Like,
I would assume probably Drew Smyly or maybe Huascar Yanela, who might take a couple innings on that. Maybe the two of them go back-to-back and try and cover 5 innings between them. Sure. Jesse Chavez has been stretched out a little bit. He could go a couple innings if they asked him to.
But I think open to that one game for him.
Right, yeah. So, I mean, it looks like both teams are going to go with a bullpen game in game 4. So this won't be an advantage one side, so to speak. Both sides are going to end up kind of being at the whim of who happens to be on their game in that game 4. The question for both teams will be, can they get to that up 2-1 entering game 4 rather than being down 1-2 or worse?
Yeah. And if the Astros have to waste like Christian Javier in like game 3 or you know what I mean? That kind of all lines up as well. So yeah.
We talked about the DH for a second, but like this match is for the pitching too. Like if you're Atlanta, who are you having as, let's assume it's not a bullpen game for game 3 and game 5. Like, who is the DH for you in that situation? Because I think there's a couple of different candidates, but maybe not a real obvious answer.
I mean, Soler? Peterson starts, I don't know. And
Eddie Rosario is a really bad defensive player. Like, I would really consider maybe him having that I would trust Jorge Soler, except for, you know, we do wonder because of the missed time and because of the diagnosis, maybe the conditioning's not great and it's better to have him as a designated hitter. But it's interesting because, like, you're going to be able to get Jock Peterson in the lineup one way or another in those games. And I think that's pretty big. Again, Wilma Flintstone.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about, as we're talking about just kind of the series in general, let's talk about what are we most looking forward to seeing in this World Series. And I'll start off just up front because I think this is maybe one of the major storyline that's going to come from this one way or the other is, if the Astros are able to pull off this victory, how much does that go about changing the narrative of the 2017 Astros? I know DJ brought up on the early side, like, while the core is still very much intact, there's a lot of new players on this team, and there's a lot of young players on this team that had no bearing on the 2017 team. How much does this change from a national perspective if they are able to pull off the victory?
I think it – this was kind of what I was going to address too as far as what I was looking forward to. I hate that that's going to be the narrative, first off, I want to say, because I think it's unfair to a lot of the players on the Astros who had nothing 100%. To do with that.
Sure.
And what I'm looking forward to, though, is this is a chance for, you know, Kyle Tucker to write a new narrative. You know what I mean? On the national stage, Jordan Alvarez sort of introducing these guys to maybe the more casual fan and being like, hey, they had nothing to do with that stuff. And like, these guys are really awesome and they're fun. And I think that's what I'm looking forward to, is like their chance to shine on this big stage. And you have Dusty Baker there too, who's been like the perfect steward for this team, the perfect vibe to get past. This wasn't done to them. There was some conversation when the Astros clinched, and I think it was John Smoltz who said, like, sort of like, this happened to them. It didn't happen to them. Like, they did it to themselves. But Dusty Baker's been the perfect steward to get them past this crisis and also to deal with the media. And I think he'll be the same way throughout the series. He's probably going to get a ton of questions from fly-in reporters are going to ask the laziest questions, mm-hmm. and Baker will have the perfect answers because that's what he does.
Yeah.
So good.
But I think in more of a national conversation, if the Astros are to win with these new faces, I think it will change the dynamic somewhat.
I don't know. It depends on like what level of hardcore fandom you're speaking to. Like the casual baseball fan or someone who's not even really paying attention to much at all, they just think of the Astros as cheaters, and they probably think this happened last year, you know, not in 2017. And
I
wrote down that I'm looking forward to the continued development of Jordan Alvarez and Kyle Tucker well. So we're on the same page. Neither guy was on the 2017 World Series team. So, you know, they're not tainted, I think, by the sign stealing stuff and the trash can bangs or what have you. And as a fantasy baseball analyst, I like being right about those guys becoming present and future stars on the fantasy scene. Not that it was all that brave of a take to suggest that Alvarez and Tucker were and are legit. They're going to be around a long time, and it'd be cool if it helped the Astros write the next chapter. I think to us guys who pay attention to baseball really closely, we've already kind of flipped the page on that a little bit. It's fun to joke about, you know, it's they're an easy team to hate, certainly, but I don't think Alvarez and Tucker would be included in that group that's easy to hate.
Or Dusty.
Or Dusty, no.
Or Dusty in particular. Chris.
I am rooting for the Braves, though. I want to put that on record.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to a lot of things. I'm looking forward to see which television show I've never heard of has a Fox star sitting like in the front row, like,
wearing an MLB hat.
Yeah, exactly. That is 100% it. But I'm like, Ian Anderson versus Jordan Alvarez is like something I'm really looking forward to. Like that matchup of that changeup against that left-handed hitter. Like, I think that's going to be fascinating to see. I just grow more impressed with Ian Anderson the more I watch him. I know he had kind of one disappointing start, but then was really good in that second. The postseason numbers are just insane to look at. You know, I think this is a really good series. Like, both of these teams, you may look at the Braves and like, look, they weren't one of the best teams in the National League. If life were fair, either the Dodgers or Giants would be playing for the World Series because they combined for 213 wins. But this is better than an 89-win team or 88 wins, however many they had. Like, this is a legitimate, really good baseball team going up against another legitimate. I think this is, like, on paper, and we've had some really good World Series over the last few years. Like, as much as the narrative of that Dodgers-Astros series was that the cheating scandal, all of those games outside of Game 7 were terrific. Like, some of the best baseball I've seen. The Astros-Nationals World Series was great. Even last year, you know, which ended on a disappointing front. But there were lots of really, really good baseball games. I think this one has a chance to be just as good as those World Series that we've had.
So who is going to be missed more from either side? Would you take Justin Verlander from the Astros, who obviously is out all year, rehabbing hit from Tommy John, or Ronald Acuna Jr. for the Braves, who, I mean, a top five in the league player who obviously out for the year with an ACL injury?
I think you could sum the colors in for Verlander if you wanted to sure, and ask sure. that question. Sure. I think the Astros missing that ace.
I agree.
Big. And it's crazy
to say that.
Which is crazy. But yeah, I really think that's the case.
Yeah. I think they're going to struggle for innings if Valdez and Garcia don't replicate what they did at the end of the ALCS. And it's hard to see them replicating it, to be honest.
I agree, but I will ask, why do you guys hate Ronald Acuna? Because that's pretty good. I'm just curious, like, wow. Do something
that's
to
why,
you.
That's why we pay you the big bucks. Acuna's good.
Did you get cut in line? Did he take, like, a Wawa donut? Did he say something bad about Provell? Was there something going on there that caused you to hate Ronald Acuna? Because
trade Acuna and sign Jock to an extension. That's right.
There you go.
That's the kind Duvall. Of bold takes that I like here. Yeah, there you go.
Adam Duvall, lifetime contract.
How much would this Braves team change the narrative of the Braves? The first time they've made the postseason 16 times since their last title in 1995, and they have zero wins over that span. That's a lot of Smoltz, Maddox, Glavin teams that did not sure. come out with a ring, have not made the World Series since 1999. How much pressure is on the Braves to get that off of their back? They've been to this spot, or at least deep into the postseason quite a bit, and they've not been able to get over the line.
I don't think any, to be completely honest. Yeah. Like, I get it. Like, fans, like, look, I think the history of Atlanta sports has been made very clear. Like, there's been some real close calls in big situations that I totally understand, like, for the fans. But for, like, the organization, I don't really think so, especially because so much of this team outside of, you know, a few exceptions like Freddie Freeman, and even Freddie Freeman is not exactly like a 40-year-old or anything like that. I believe he's 32. So much of this is a young core that, like, yes, it sucks to win a World Series, to not win a World Series, and flags fly forever. But I don't think that there's like pressure for them. I think they're honestly playing more with house money than pressure, to be honest.
I agree with that. I think they would consider this a highly
successful season.
Yeah, definitely successful run that has reinvigorated the fan base around this young core. And if it ends in a loss to the Astros in the World Series, I mean, they'd be bummed out, but I don't think the current players, certainly the fan base, feels like we're owed one here soon. But yeah, the players themselves, I don't think they have any connection to what happened in the early 2000s and
I think
the late 90s.
The Braves are built to be sustainable, although Freddie Freeman will be a free agent, which is kind of amazing that, like, nobody's talking about that.
Yeah.
And I don't know how the Braves haven't given him a blank check and be like, here you go.
I think everyone has just been assuming that it would get done, but we're hey, like, next week.
Basically.
Literally next week. No, I agree with you as well there. This Braves team is too young for it to have all of the past hung around its neck. I mean, I'm sure the articles are out there, the scuttlebutt is around the stadium, but I think there's so much young, fun, and exciting talent that does not have a lot of carryover here. And like you said, playing with house money, if you told a Braves fan at the beginning of the season that they'd make the playoffs without Marcelo Ozuna, Mike Soroka, and Ronald Acuna Jr., and all three of them are out, and not only do they make the postseason, but they win the National League and go to the World Series, I don't think there's a Braves fan out there that would have believed you. So I think they're playing with a certain level of, like, look, worst comes to worst, we lose and we put a National League pennant up on the scoreboard somewhere and say, like, we did that. Mm-hmm. But knowing full well that they can have a lot of the pieces going into next year. And let's quickly talk about that one second. Carlos Correa, a free agent at the end of this year, really has been one of the faces of this Astros winning, really since he got drafted number one overall. He was the start of that turnaround for what was a very bad Astros team for a long period. And obviously Freddie Freeman, the face of the Braves here, no offense to Ronald Acuna Jr., but I think most Braves fan would tell you the same thing. They love their Freddie Freeman. Sure. which one of them not only has a bigger impact in the series, but which one of them might be playing, has the bigger chance of their swan song happening right now in the next week.
I think Correa is a goner.
Yeah, he's gone.
I agree.
So that's probably the swan song. I would be surprised if Freddie Freeman is not a Brave next year.
Same. But it's weird that something hasn't gotten
done. It's weird that we're having the conversation. Yeah. Weirder things have happened.
Yeah. It seems like it was such a luck for him to be back and that an extension could get worked out. But I don't blame Freddie Freeman for saying, hey, maybe I can go out here and somebody goes nuts. And they should go nuts. Like, it's weird that he's not talked about more as one of these impact free agents, because in terms of offense potential, very few guys better. But Carlos Correa, I think that bridge has been burned and he's looking to kind of get out of town with a championship, because I just cannot see, especially with what Houston has. I mean, you can move either Bregman over to shortstop, or, you know, there are some other very good shortstop options that probably aren't going to be as expensive as Correa. But yeah,
it just comes down. The Astros have a lot of money committed to next year.
Absolutely.
And the Braves kind of do too, but it gets a lot more comfortable if you move into 2023.
Right.
And obviously the Cunha and Albies extensions help them greatly long-term to lock up Freddie. And even if it's a bad contract in the second half of the deal, which it could be, cause he's not a young dude.
Yes.
I think they would feel a lot more, they're going to re-sign Freddie Freeman. I'm going to put it at 98th percentile.
I'm a Mets fan, so I should hate Freddie Freeman. I should hate all the Braves, but he's one of my favorite players in baseball.
Yeah.
And he's like a legit, he's like a fun dude. Like, watch him play. He's having fun. And I like seeing that.
He wins the cutest kid contest for sure. Like, I've never seen Carlos Correa's kids. I'm sure they're adorable, but like, Charlie Freeman's a star. Like, dude is a, I'm already looking forward to disagreeing with his takes on Fox Sports on 2043. Like you said, he is so fun to watch, and he seems to embrace the young players, which a lot of veterans don't necessarily do. So yeah, a lot to like there.
All right. So now we have finally come to that time in the show. Let's get a little predictions going here. And Chris, start us off. Who is the champion a week or so from now?
I'm going to say the Braves in seven. I just think that I like the pitching for that Atlanta staff. Houston's very, very good. But I just, as long as that bullpen doesn't absolutely collapse in terms of those right-handers that we talked about earlier, I just think that Atlanta is the more, it's weird to say, more complete baseball team right now. And I think it's also kind of what I want.
All right, DJ?
I'm saying Braves in six. The key for me, and we've said this multiple times during the show, which versions of Framber Valdez and Luis Garcia show up. I don't have a ton of faith. Like, they were so locked in mechanically in those starts. It's just a lot to ask for them to come back and do the same thing again, showing career best velocity. They were hit around so hard in the previous starts this postseason. I just don't think it's going to continue. Like Chris said, I think the Braves are the all-around better team, which is you wouldn't think that it's a huge underdog even to the Dodgers, obviously. But I really like the run the Braves are on. I think their lineup's better than a lot of people give them credit for, and I really trust their top three starters, and I think that's going to make a big difference in this series.
Drew,
I do have concerns about the Astros pitching staff, which we've talked about, and if this series gets to six or seven games, I think the Braves become the favorite. But I'm feeling the Astros bombard the Braves early at Minute Maid Park in the first two games and you know, kind of strut their stuff, flex their muscles. I'm taking the Astros in five.
Whoa, five.
Okay,
wow.
Good swing. I like it.
I hate Ronald Acuna. This is the takeaway that I get from that.
That's it. I hate doing it, but like I'm with you on this one. Drew, I think the Astros, I worry about that pitching staff, like we've all said. But that Astros offense, if there's one unit that is, I think, drastically better than the other or just than all the others, I mean, the Astros offense is the closest thing to perfect that is walking into this World Series.
Really good.
They've scored 69 runs so far in this postseason, and they haven't gone the distance in any series. Like, it's not, they're not squeaking in sevens. You know what I mean? Like, they're going. So give me the, and not to mention, as an X factor, Dusty Baker, I trust him a little bit more. The Astros, this Astros team, just they want it. They want it so badly after the 2017. That core wants this so that way they can say, you know what, even if Correa leaves next year and all the rest, like, we proved it. And give me Astros in seven. I think this goes tight. But I think Astros are able to pull it off at home for the last two games. That being at Minute Maid, I think, is a big deal if it goes the distance. Give me Astros at home in seven.
Fair.
All right. Well, I think it's going to be a great series.
I hope so anyway. It's no fun to watch postseasons that – and we have been spoiled with so many good World Series over the last
I hope years, it so. Goes seven so we can delay the conversation about the winter and the Fair CBA. Enough.
I'm good with that.
Yep.
I think that's the one thing that can unite all baseball fans right now is just make the games go on as long as possible so we don't see what's on the other side of that card.
Yep. Mm.
Exactly.
I just don't want I don't want it to go seven games because I'd have to cover that seventh game. So, like, I'd prefer not to win. So,
okay.
Well, let's hope DJ's right about Astros or Braves and Six. Excuse me.
But that just about does it for our show tonight. As always, if you like what you're hearing, make sure you are subscribed to Circling the Bases wherever you listen to your podcasts. And if you listen on Apple Podcasts, please be sure to rate and review us. You can follow me on Twitter at Kyle Don't Lie. You can follow Chris at Crawford_MILB, Drew at Drew Silk, and DJ at DJ Short. Be sure to tune back in Friday morning as DJ and Drew will cover the first few games of the World Series, which they're normal to show, so make sure you don't miss it. So until next time, stay safe out there, and as always, thanks for listening.
Dom Smith, World Series MVP 2023.
Doers, mowing season is here. With Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now you can get gas-like power with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower for just $329. With a runtime of nearly an hour, it's the perfect mower to tackle your half-acre lawn without a trip to the gas station. Just push and mow. Your grass won't wait, so buy it online and pick it up in-store to get out there sooner. Get gas-like power this spring with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower just $329 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.